Ready to start talking to your kids about financial literacy? Meet Greenlight, the debit card and money app that teaches kids and teens how to earn, save, spend wisely, and invest with your guardrails in place. Parents can send instant money transfers, automate allowance, and more. Plus, keep an eye on spending with real-time notifications. Join more than 6 million families building healthy financial habits together on Greenlight. Get your first month free at greenlight.com/odyssey. That's greenlight.com/odyssey.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Wolverine 24/7 podcast, your audio source for all things Michigan football, basketball, and recruiting. I'm your host, Zach Shaw. Steve Lorenz here with me. Got a loaded show, as promised the other day, football only. we had a little spring review episode lined up, but there was a couple breaking news points, so we'll talk about that. So the rough agenda, we'll talk about Xavier Worthy asking out of his letter of intent. We'll discuss Matty Dudek going to Mississippi State. We'll talk about that a little bit more succinctly, just because the recruiting pod the other day talked about Courtney Morgan and kind of the what he would bring. And then we'll talk about the spring game and whether Michigan missed the mark on making that thing as private and closed as possible. And we'll discuss why we both think it did miss the mark. A little spoiler there for you. And then I went and fielded a bunch of questions, and we also have a couple quick lightning round things. So going to try to get through it all as not as quickly as possible, but got a lot to hit on. So we'll get right into it. Xavier Worthy, top 100 signee for Michigan, so not just a recruit, tweeted about an hour before we hit record that he had asked to leave his national letter of intent with Michigan and will reopen his recruitment. Pretty strong, I guess we don't need to speak for him, but pretty strong vibes that Texas is where he will be heading next. Don't see this too much, Steve, where a guy who is signed before he even arrives to campus asks out of their national letter of intent. If you do see it, it's often due to coaching changes. So this is a little bit different. Now, he did cite due to circumstances beyond my control. I don't know if that's him saying that or if that's the truth. Doesn't really matter. He's asking out of this national letter of intent. Will not be a part of Michigan's 2021 recruiting class, which before Worthy left, it was ranked number 10 in the country. They had five top 100 recruits. Now they have four. So Steve, your immediate reaction, this kind of started to become something we felt was inevitable by Wednesday night and by Thursday afternoon. The other shoe had dropped. So he was someone that was originally going to enroll early, and then he didn't. And then there was lots of talk about what that entails or whatever. And then ultimately he doesn't end up arriving to campus at all. Your initial reaction or thought about what this means?
The most simple way to put it, Michigan loses one of their best signees, right? I mean, I think he's a guy, one of the more exciting receivers they've recruited, not just under Harbaugh, but in recent memory. I think the guy's got some big time talent. I think he's a guy who could have played, right? I think he would have played immediately if he had been able to enroll early.
So for context for our listeners, he runs a 10.55 100 meter dash. He actually ran that as a sophomore in high school, and he has a 21.21 200 meter dash. I mean, it's not too hyperbolic to say he is maybe one of the three or four fastest high school football recruits in the country for this cycle. Hard to keep that kind of speed on the bench for very long.
Right. So there's that. I think overall, I don't know as far, it's obviously on the field, it could potentially hurt Michigan. The flip side, just felt like it was, I just felt like this was, I don't want to say inevitable, but it just seemed there was always something going on in this one. You had him visiting Alabama at the end of the cycle, still conflicting information about, at the time Alabama had four top 100 receivers already committed. If he was even a take for them, if he had been, he may have signed with them. It's hard to say. That's one of those, it depends on who you talk to type deals.
Sure.
Michigan admissions does not feel like, you know, the early enrollee thing fell through at the last second. Not really sure why. Only thing I can say, that has nothing on Harbaugh or the football program. I think they did everything they could to get that done and get him up there. So yeah, I mean, it's a significant loss for Michigan from a talent standpoint. You know, it's just kind of funny to me that, and I'm not, this is not a knock on like anybody in our network or anything at all. They're just doing their job, but just kind of funny to me that other team sites in the network were aware of this 48, 72 hours ago. How do you get a heads up on that when other schools aren't supposed to be talking to these kids or have any communication of them with them of any kind when they're bound to a letter of intent? If I'm Michigan, I'm trying to do something about this. Not necessarily to they're not going to get, he's not coming back. Like that's,
you know, sure.
That's,
but, that's, but about the tampering.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Michigan needs to, this, you need to do something about this. This is ridiculous. You know, whether the kid wanted to be there or not, that's a whole different, you know, and if he really didn't want to be there or it wasn't going to, whatever, that's fine. But there's just no doubt that's what was going on here. Let's just be clear, right? Like I said, others in our network who, again, do an amazing job. That's their job, to get information. We're aware of this before we really even were. Something doesn't sit right if you're Michigan and that's the case. So, you know, that's kind of the other thing I'd really say with this one. You know, if I'm Michigan, I'm, you can't go down quietly about something like this, because then it could just happen again and again and again. And with the way that recruiting and all this goes now, nothing will probably get done about it anyway. Doesn't really seem like the NCAA is more concerned about IP addresses for the portal.
Yeah, we're not supposed to have access to that portal, but
yeah, but yet, you know, everything else that goes on across the country as far as recruiting goes, I mean, it's becoming a borderline joke. And actually it's been a joke if we're being honest. So this another example where, yeah, like you said at the outset, it does look like Texas will be where he ends up. That's where I expect him to go. You remember Sarkisian was the offensive coordinator at Alabama when Worthy was visiting and being recruited by the Tide. I mean, it's just put two and two together there. Sounds like communication there has not waned or faded at all, even though it's supposed to. So, you know, that's the other end of it. That, to me, that's not on Harbaugh and Michigan. Like, what are they supposed to do? You know, so, but overall, yeah, I mean, he's a hell of a football player, very talented kid. You know, be really interested to see how his college career pans out for sure.
Yeah, I mean, it, as we mentioned a moment ago, kind of has speed and elusiveness that is really hard to keep out of the game. And so I expect him to be really good. I mean, his 24/7 I guess scouting report comparable was DeSean Jackson. So he's that kind of explosive playmaker. Certainly, as you kind of mentioned, I mean, every part of this recruitment, it got to the point where I was like, I think 2 months ago, I might've even said, there's no way he ends up on campus. I mean, this is too much.
Felt like there were always something. There's been something going on in that recruitment since well before signing day, like I said.
And you look at someone like JJ McCarthy. He committed in 2019, like May 2019, and there was literally not a peep since. So some recruitments are a little bit more back and forth. Some recruitments are not. His was of the more back and forth. And as you said, there was always something. It was never as easy as it could have been for Michigan. I agree with you on the tampering. I don't know if Michigan needs to be like waving the tampering flag, because I have to imagine, similar to like negative recruiting, I have to imagine every school is doing it a little bit, but it can't be this obvious. And you know, I'm pretty in favor of the immediate eligibility, one-time eligibility transfers. But I do feel bad for schools that have to like fend off their star players getting recruited. You know, a women's basketball example, Ohio State's one of their star players entered the portal and like 5 days later, they were committed to Kentucky. Or it's not Kentucky, Connecticut, excuse me, UConn. And it was like, huh, she made up her mind that quickly, huh? I mean, I guess it's possible because UConn is amazing at women's basketball, but you know, I would hate to get to a point now where like every time a player does well for let's say like a second tier team, maybe not like the Alabama, Clemson, Ohio States, you know, the next group or even the group below that, you know, it's like every time a player has a big game, they have to like, the coaches have to like say, now don't listen to, you know, ex coach if they start calling. Cause it's pretty clearly written that that's against the rules. So you could argue, well, you know, tampering should be allowed, or you could argue, well, recruits should be paid. You could argue, I mean, all these rules. Yeah. You could do some hand wringing and say these rules aren't necessary, but they're the written rules. And it's, in my mind, they should be followed. I mean, it's certainly you don't want to run into a situation where the parity in college football is getting worse. Now, Michigan to Texas wouldn't indicate that necessarily, but if, I don't know, I think our listeners can grasp the slippery slope if tampering just becomes accepted, normalized, becomes just kind of a way things go.
I just don't think they should just let it slide by. I agree with you as far as like, you know, nothing public, right? Like nothing outrageous, but
yeah, it doesn't need to be like an open letter, but maybe let the NCAA know, like, hey, we have pretty strong evidence that there was tampering here.
Right. And again, and, like nothing's probably going to come of it. You know, like I said,
yeah, but if you say, something enough, something will come of it.
Right.
I know. So, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, as far as the loss, he and Giles Jackson are now both out of the class. I'm of the belief in football that one player doesn't, especially a player who hasn't played any college football, doesn't necessarily completely derail a team's season, but it's certainly a big loss. And you know, Michigan, I think they like what they have with Ronnie Bell. I think they like what they have with Cornelius Johnson, Roman Wilson, AJ Henning, Mike Sainer still. And so far, they like what they have in Andrell Anthony and Christian Dixon. But you know, Jackson and Worthy were two guys who probably, I mean, Henning was right in that mix. And Wilson was as well, but I mean, they were representing a new wave of like elite speed coming to Michigan. So I don't think the wide receiver group is doomed. Just like I don't think Worthy leaving is going to be like the unraveling of Michigan's 2021 recruiting class. Like I would anticipate no one else asks out of their national letter of intent or anything like that.
Silver lining here is that Andrell Anthony apparently had a very, very good spring camp. Right out of the get-go. And, you know, Worthy a lot more highly regarded in the recruiting world.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. But it sounds like Andrell Anthony has, like, that they're more than happy with where that's at this early on. So,
okay.
So there good is that. Team. Not good saying that not replacement or it's not a loss.
Yeah, yeah.
But just worth noting that he had an excellent spring camp from everything I've been told.
And that was being said before Jackson transferred and before Worthy asked out of his NLI. So it's not Michigan trying to spin the narrative or anything. And that's not what we're trying to do either. Certainly. It's a significant loss, but I mean, it's one out of 100 and no, I guess not 100, one out of 85 ish scholarship players. So anyway, we will see how Worthy does. We will see how Michigan does. I wouldn't expect them to suddenly pursue a receiver in the transfer portal or anything to replace him. I think they feel good about their first or second string, but obviously it does put a little bit more emphasis on how Michigan recruits the 2022 class and wide receivers. You know, they brought in three this class. Now it's two. So obviously they will need to add to those numbers and try to find someone that can do what Worthy was going to do. Anyway, another departure This one, maybe, I think it was met with mixed reviews from Michigan fans. Maybe that's not the right way to describe it, but Matty Dudek recruiting. See, was his title the recruiting director?
Yeah, he's pretty much recruiting coordinator, director of recruiting. I don't know how they phrase it, but he's pretty much the guy that ran the recruiting department.
He will be heading to Mississippi State. I don't really cover recruiting. Our recruiting pod did talk about Morgan, who former Michigan player who is leaving a pretty similar job that Dudek had at Fresno State and will be doing it at his alma mater. Steve, your thoughts on Dudek? I know fans kind of often blamed him. I don't know enough if to know if it's fair or unfair, but they often blamed him for some of the recruiting. But obviously he's getting hired immediately by another Power Five school. So your thoughts on the departure and what it means for Michigan?
I think Michigan would have preferred that both guys had stayed on. I don't think it was a pressure move to move Dudek out. It didn't really feel that way. You see all these programs across the country are expanding their recruiting departments, not contracting them. But might've been a deal where Morgan didn't really want to be, wasn't being hired to be a number two guy necessarily. Now, Sam has a lot of knowledge on Morgan and his abilities and his history. I didn't know that much about him from the recruiting standpoint. So our recruiting pod for Morgan specifically would probably be the place to go. We talk about it at length. I know one thing for me that stood out about his resume, extensive experience in the agent world and with the NIL stuff. You know, I think having a guy like that is like basically a must at this point, whether he's your head of recruiting or just somewhere in the department. I think you have to have at least one guy who has experience there. So there is that from a Dudek standpoint. Yeah. I mean, scapegoat is really the word that comes to mind when I think of Dudek. I mean, he kind of caught the wrath. I'd say this. He was not afraid to respond to that, like that wing of, and I just say Twitter, really.
Yeah. The vocal minority, the wing of
fans on Twitter. Yeah. Who like to, find individuals, let's say, to place, you know, blame for something on every time something goes wrong. He got a lot of that. And I think it manifested itself once he started to respond to people a little bit. I mean, I got to be honest, like, it'd be really hard not to respond to some of these people sometimes, right? That's one of the, we don't deal with it that often, writing, but when it does pop up, it's really hard not to respond to some of these idiots out there. Really, Dudek was one of the biggest reasons why Michigan was able to keep this 21 class intact. Hmm. Yeah, they went 2-4. They still signed a top 10 class and had virtually, I think, a couple guys decommit, right? One of which I don't think they really cared about. You know, they were able to keep all of these top guys locked in through National Signing Day, Worthy notwithstanding, and nothing sure. to, like, that's a different, now that was a different deal after you sign him. Like, so yeah, I mean, he was a big part of that review. Most of the reviews that we got on him from parents and families and stuff were pretty positive, very positive, actually. Seemed to have a really good relationship with a lot of the kids and their families. At the same time, I my suspicion is maybe Michigan saw areas where they can improve some things. Mm-hmm. Morgan sounds like a guy who has a boatload of relationships across the country, California being one area where he's very well known, very well respected by a lot of the top programs in the, you know, obviously Southern California being where the concentration of talent is. So, you know, there is that. And another alum, former player, I think there's always a plus side in bringing a guy back who understands what Michigan is all about. You know, my honest suspicion, I think everyone's maybe feels like they won in this deal. He may have been somebody who needed a change of scenery, like was not too upset about finding a change of scenery.
Sure.
So, you know, like I said, we'll see if, like, this is the thing. Yeah. it's hard to like look at an individual recruitment and say the director of recruiting won you that recruitment, which is a lot of what people tried to put on him, really only when they would lose a guy, not when they would get a guy. So that's where it'll be interesting to see some of the differences will be with Morgan and Dudek is, you know, I know one thing Sam specifically mentioned that you don't really think much about, those connections that he has in a lot of ways. This is something I've always been big about with Michigan. Maybe this is something that they weren't doing that well. You have to have good intel to know that you're not wasting your time with a kid who may tell you he's interested when the coaches are on the phone with him, but in reality, he might not be that. You know, it's hard for a kid to say, please stop calling me, I'm not interested in your school, right? Right. Like it's not really how it works a lot of times. So his hire could be an area where they improve a little bit, where it's like, you know, yes, this kid has interest or there's an in with this kid, like could eliminate some of that work that the assistant coaches may have to do to get to the bottom of that type of stuff. So there is that. That was one thing Sam mentioned specifically. I thought that stood out, but, you know, feels like there's an opportunity for Michigan to improve here. I just don't know enough about Morgan specifically to know how quickly or, you know, outside of the connections and stuff that he has, where this will happen. But like I said, I suspect that both parties maybe feel a little bit better today than they did yesterday. So yeah.
Yeah. I think you're absolutely right about whenever something goes wrong, people look up who's responsible and they don't necessarily look it up when something goes right. I mean, the fact is, I think it's frankly, I would argue it's miraculous that Michigan ended up with a top 10 class. They didn't, I don't know if they deserve the top 10 class in terms of what they've put on the field the past, not just last season, but the season before as well. You know, so it's, there were some things that were going right. I actually agree. I think there was plenty that was going wrong as well. Anyways, not really my area of expertise. I think the big thing is, you know, my question is how well will Morgan identify the talent before everyone else does? Because that's such a huge part. If you're not a team that's in the playoff, well, I would say every year, but not in the playoff at all. I mean, you have to be an expert evaluator to get kind of the hidden gem recruits. And so that's something that I'm kind of looking at, is like seeing like what kind of path, what kind of tendencies do they go toward? Anyways, that is going to do it for our discussions on Dudek and Worthy. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, did Michigan miss the mark with its spring football approach, along with a couple lightning round questions and then fielding questions from you guys? This is the Wolverine 24/7 podcast.
Introducing the two-way V4, where groundbreaking fuel cell technology meets fresh foam cushioning for the ultimate performance. With fuel cell, each step feels explosive, delivering unparalleled energy return. Paired with fresh foam, experience maximum comfort throughout the game. Its lightweight textile upper offers support and breathability without sacrificing agility. Whether you're hitting the clutch shot or locking down the opposition, the two-way V4 gives you the tools to play at a high level. Learn more and purchase the two-way for yourself at newbalance.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Welcome back. Thanks for waiting. So I kind of wanted to discuss it the other day, and we said, well, we'll wait for to do a football podcast. But Michigan held a spring game. It did not invite the media. It did not invite fans. It didn't have a direct tie to one of the players. I mean, it was meant to be like family. I know some people who weren't family also got to go, but you're talking about maybe like 400 people were in attendance. I think that is a huge, huge disservice to Michigan fans and Michigan players when other schools are not doing that. Other schools aren't making it secret. They didn't stream it, which, you know, there was some talk about, oh, they didn't know when they were going to do the game. And so the Big Ten slots, Big Ten network slots were full. Eh, not hard to offer more. And I mean, they offered what, a 75 second highlight video, and about 30 seconds of it was them like approaching the field and like lining up for plays. I just feel bad for Michigan fans. I feel like they got in a spring where Michigan was supposed to be turning a new leaf, getting more youthful, getting, you know, building some excitement again after a really deflating season. What are you hiding? What's the secrecy for? You know, and there's just enough plausible reasons. You know, there is a pandemic going on. You know, you could argue that maybe make some case that the Big Ten Network streaming, whatever the proprietary info. I don't buy that. Michigan continues to hold its fans at an arm's length. This is not the first time. They've stopped a lot of fan events, actually, that used to be staples under, you know, Lloyd Carr, Brady Hoke. I mean, my favorite example is Brady Hoke used to come to the coaches' radio show for an hour and just hang out and like meet people during the commercial breaks and join the conversation the whole time. Jim Harbaugh's pretty much phoned. I mean, obviously last year everyone was phoning it in, but in 2019, I mean, there was discussions about like, do they keep doing this show? Because even though it's written in his contract, he was calling for like 5 minutes and people were going to Pizza House expecting to see him and then he wouldn't show up. And so this is not the first time. I do think this is the most egregious time that Michigan is holding fans at arm's length, kind of dissociating themselves from the fans. And that is I don't think that's a very wise decision on their part. Because if you hold fans at arm's length, what happens when you stumble or what happens when you fall? None of those fans are going to come catch you. I mean, there is not a lot of support from Michigan fans for this coaching administration, for these players. I mean, I simply tweeted out that Cade McNamara was cited as the starter by Michigan's quarterbacks coach. And people are like, this is going to be such a waste of a season, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's a lot of vitriol, and maybe that's what Michigan was hiding from with this secret spring game, but that's not how you do it. I mean, think about Arizona. They hired Jed Fish. It was a very controversial hire. Oh, you know, I know Michigan fans like Jed Fish, but you know, he doesn't have that much head coaching experience. Fans were pretty mad about it. They might still be mad about it, but his response is he literally opened up every single practice to fans. And he basically gave the media full access. Now, as far as the media is concerned, this isn't a media complaint. I obviously have my complaints about, you know, covering a team like Michigan, but I'm over it at this point. They haven't opened practice in a decade. They haven't, you know, they got rid of Michigan Media Day, which was an opportunity to tell the stories of players who might not be like the typical interview subjects. I think most reporters are kind of over it at this point, but the fans, I mean, what does Michigan gain from keeping fans at arm's length? Less people tweet angrily if things go wrong? I mean, it's a spring game. It's very hard to look bad in a spring game. And so, and even if you do, you can just say, well, they're playing each other. I mean, it's just puzzling. And I think ultimately, and I'm going to let you expand on this, Steve, as well. I think it shows a very unconfident team right now. I mean, if Michigan... You know, if you ask former players, like, what's the difference for winning on the road or beating Ohio State, some things that have plagued Michigan the last few years, because otherwise, I mean, there have been a lot more wins than losses, but obviously the road games, the bowl games in Ohio State. And the thing they talk about is confidence. Michigan doesn't go in there confident that they're going to beat Ohio State. They don't go in there confident that they're going to smack Wisconsin on the road. And so how exactly does closing a spring practice, I mean, posting what, 4 30-second videos throughout the spring, not making assistant coaches, you know, not letting them have press conferences, things like that. I feel like that sends a message of lacking confidence. And it just feels bad for the players because now they don't, I mean, they view the fans as the enemy, because that's kind of what Michigan is suggesting here. So I thought it was pretty lame move. I know some schools didn't even have spring games, so they're not alone, but a lot of schools Michigan plays every year did have spring games. They did have fans in attendance, or they will. And they are keeping the team as accessible as possible to the fans. And so I don't know, hiding, maybe Michigan wasn't hiding, but the read from the outside, which is what we're resigned to, is that they were hiding. And I think that sends a brutal message of fans being at arm's length. And then I think it also tells the players, the fans aren't here to support you. You know, you're just kind of on your own, which is a bummer. I mean, college football is supposed to be fun. Why is it so hard for Michigan to have fun? Anyway, Steve, your thoughts?
Yeah, so disconnect was the word I used. I don't know, whenever we first started talking about this. The only thing, but not even sure how I feel about this. The only thing I can think of is that their angle is to try to take as much pressure off of the players as they possibly can. As far as, you know, if there had been a spring game and say player A dropped a few passes or something, that he's going to have to listen to it all offseason from his own fan base. On the flip side,
seems like that's playing, like coaching scared a little bit, doesn't it?
I was going to say, I'm not advocating for that position. I'm just trying to think of why they would take this approach. My initial thought, the biggest thing, those videos they would post are, to me, they're just a slap in the face. I think it's ridiculous. You have,
I think I counted, they did a video and you could see seven plays in the video, plays from a two-hour spring game.
And not, you'd see seven plays, but they were from like such a zoomed point of view that you weren't even really getting anything out of that. You know, even when you see a back cut through the hole and get clear, it's like you didn't even know anything else that was going on. I thought they were slapping the face for fans. And again, I don't think nobody, asking for the floodgates to be open here. But sure. there's no connection between the players and the fans, really, and the staff and the fans right now at all. I mean, you think about, and again, not a media complaint necessarily, but the only access anyone's had to any of the assistant coaches has been through Michigan's own like sponsor. Yeah.
This team sponsored podcast,
you know, yeah. And I just think that doesn't sit right. You know, it's, I still think most fans, and this is where the vocal minority maybe continues to kind of win out a little bit. I think most fans want to get to know these new coaches,
a couple of them are like beloved alumni. Right. Too. This is controversial hires that everyone's pissed about. Like, I thought Mike Hart was a completely celebrated hire.
Right.
I thought, you know, bringing Ron Bellamy in, I mean.
But that being said, this sort of deal predates Harbaugh, although I think it's gotten worse as far as the closed off. Yeah, you know, I think it almost kind of creates a vacuum where, and this is kind of what I had told you from the get-go, it creates a situation where you talk about no media day where – there's no opportunity for us or anybody to really get to know who these players are off the field. And it creates a situation where the fans kind of end up just viewing these kids as like just football players, when there's such a clamoring nowadays to look at these guys as more than that. And as they should, you know, that was one of the best parts of back in the day doing the media days, was doing the stories on like the, you know, maybe the freshman linebacker who, you know, probably wasn't going to play this year, but maybe playing a couple of years, to kind of, you know, introduce them to the fan base, let them get to know these people a little bit. And then,
other schools, it's not even just media. I mean, they legitimately have fan days where like you can go and like get some autographs or like meet somebody. And now obviously those are not happening during COVID, but I mean, Michigan hasn't had those since I started covering the team. And it's, you know, some schools, they open like multiple practices per year. They open up a couple in the fall. I mean, it's just so bizarre that Michigan, and this is not something that is new. I think you're right. I mean, it's not like the last 2 years. I mean, we're talking about the last decade, really. But I don't get it. There is nothing to be gained from keeping fans at arm's length, because, you know, think about, like, say Michigan plays Washington and they lose because Cade McNamara throws an interception on the final drive. No one's going to say, oh, I met Cade one time here and had this really great interaction with him. I feel bad for him. Obviously he's in a tough spot. No, it's going to be quarterback number 12 threw an interception and made my day worse. I hate him. I mean, it just dehumanizes.
Which is the stuff that you see on social media. Yes, maybe some maybe think that what Zach just said is exaggerating, but that is like legit. That's the type of stuff you see. And again, it's all social media. It's all keyboard, you know, not having to say it to their face type stuff. But I think it's gotten to the point now where that's going to happen no matter what. So there's no reason for there to be this like big chasm between.
Don't take it out on the good fans. Right, I mean, not that there's like good or bad fans, but there are fans who like want to support this team, and Michigan's making it very difficult for anyone to support this team right now.
I agree. I think it's just kind of a sad situation, and maybe because expectations are lower, I'm not necessarily surprised. It's just, but this is how it was when they were like winning a lot.
Every single reporter I know, when they heard that there would be no spring game and that there would be no public viewing of the spring game, every single reporter said, of course not. Of course there isn't. I mean, again, I don't want to act like Michigan's the only school doing this. There were a couple others that did, but well, look at how accessible Ohio State is. Look at how many times Ryan Day's either at events or meeting with the media or, you know, speaking to fans at rallies, things like that. Look at how accessible the players are there. It's just, I don't think it's doing Michigan any favors. If anything, I think it's making the program, and I guess less likable. Is that the right phrase to use? I mean, there's not a lot of people in Michigan's corner right now. I mean, maybe they show up in September, but that's kind of a gamble. Is that like, oh, we can do whatever we want, people fans will still buy tickets. I mean, maybe they do, but certainly once the losses start coming, I don't think people are going to be there to like pick Michigan up and support them and like, I don't know, make them feel better.
Well, it doesn't even, they're not, there's not even being the opportunity to even be excited is not really even being allowed almost, I guess, is about, because there's nothing, there's nothing to go off of outside of. And again, just be honest, the canned responses that we get and media availabilities and stuff, those are never going to excite anybody.
Well, take Andrel Anthony. You mentioned he's had a good spring.
How do you, nobody, but it's like people have to trust us that
he did. And frankly, after last season, when they talked so highly about this player and that player and no one looked any good, I wouldn't necessarily trust like the rumors and rumblings. Now, I wouldn't say they're wrong. I mean, clearly they're not saying every player looks good, but at the same time, if we say Andrel Anthony had a good spring and fans roll their eyes, I don't blame them. They have literally no proof. Absolutely. And they have no reason to believe it.
I'm with you. I mean, I think there was hesitance to want to even report this spring if we heard that somebody was performing well because of the response that would the assured response that we were going to get, which it ended up not being as bad as I think we anticipated. Because I think happened is enough people were just, it's like, I think I wrote the article. I don't know if we're going to discuss it or not, but like the first thing I wrote after, I was like, it's just nice to talk football again. I think a lot of people feel that way. Yeah. You know, it'd be nicer to have tangible football that both we and they have seen. That's why we're here right now.
it's just very ironic because I think now the success of the basketball team, obviously, kind of suddenly you turn around and start talking about football. Some fans are gonna just say, I'm gonna wait till September. But I think this was a spring after last year and everything that went. I mean, there was an opportunity for Michigan to turn a new leaf, you know, come out really positive, just say like, hey, you know, we stunk last year. but we're doing everything we can. I mean, there's a semblance of a likable comeback story. Now, is it for every fan? Of course not. Is it for media? Definitely not. But there's something there, and I think some Michigan fans are looking for the light. You know, show us the light. Show us what's new, what's exciting. And then Michigan responded by showing a 35-second video clip of the jerseys. I don't know. It's,
I just can't get over those clips, man. Like I said, I feel somebody from the site inevitably will post it on the board, and it's because there's nothing that this is it. And it's
right
down like the, what is it? The Kennedy film, the Zapruder.
Yeah.
You know, it's like that is like all of it's like overanalyzed, you know, where it's like, it, I just, those videos are just, they are, man, to me, they're just kind of a slap in the face to the fans. It's just, if this is the only access they're going to give fans, like, just why even put them out there? You know, I don't think those are pumping. Like, I guess my point being the idea of those videos, I think, is to get people pumped up. I don't think they're really pumping anybody up.
No, like, not when the context is, this is all you get.
Right. Exactly. If they were, yes, if this was an addition to like stuff, then maybe, but I just, at this point, you know, I don't think they're not pumping anybody up. So
anyway, we got a few, things about spring ball that we're going to discuss. We'll do some three quick lightning round questions, and then we will open up the mailbag and see what you guys asked. First, I think you and I actually have slightly different stances here. What is after spring ball and you know, after what we just said, kind of disqualifies a little bit of what we're saying, but we did hear plenty, both publicly on the record stuff and then kind of the rumor on the street. What is Michigan's best position group right now?
Oh boy. Talent wise, it might be running back.
Okay.
And that's where it's weird. It's like running back success depends partially on how the offensive line plays, right?
True.
It's one of those things where like we may talk in December, January next year, and the running backs didn't statistically perform well. But I think from a pure talent standpoint, I think with the two freshmen that they've brought in, and even with the Charbonnet departure, I think running back is pretty high up there, if not at the top. I think, I think you thought I was going to say safety.
I did.
Yeah. That, I think it could be. Just depends on if Brad Hawkins can rebound or not. Everything sounds like Daxton Hill is playing the way that we've expected him
mm-hmm.
to play. Right. So I think there's optimism there. And I think they're also optimistic, which has turned into a little bit of a debate on the board. It's like, I think Michigan expects Brad Hawkins to rebound. He was an all pro football focused kid in 19. You know, I thought played, I don't know if I would have considered him all conference myself, but right. I thought he played pretty well. I thought he played his 2019 to me, I thought was a precursor to a very strong 2020. And instead that did not happen like at all.
Mm-hmm.
I think Michigan thinks he rebounds. Now to me, the other player I think of when we always talk about rebound was Kalik Hudson. Cause he had that massive game against Minnesota a few years ago, looked like one of the best players in the country for like a 2 or 3 week stretch there. And then never, he had a rough year the year after that. And I think there was the talk that he would rebound in his senior year. And he did. He didn't play as bad as he did the year before, but he still didn't quite play up to the level he did for that 3 or 4 game stretch.
Yeah, it was like a sturdy
right.
season. It wasn't like an explosive one.
So that's what I wonder is that the Hawkins that we're going to see? Or is he actually, could he not like rebound, but actually play better than he did in 2019? So I think safety's in the conversation because they also like the young guys that they have. RJ Moten sounds like yes. He's going to be a guy. Makari Page got a lot of playing time last year, which I think is always a good thing for a young player. So there's definitely talent there, but I would say running back. Blake Corum is another guy that we've gotten a lot of positive talk. That's one guy fans may have a little insight in because it seems like he was in all of those videos that they
yeah he's could been kinda, in a lot of photos.
Yeah, yeah. If you splice those together, you've got like a good 12-second clip of Blake Corum doing a few things this spring. So maybe some visual there that makes it look like. But he's also
they're not putting the third string guy up right. there for 12 seconds. Right.
So I think there's some positives there for sure. And then also, like I said, I think both Edwards and Dunlap, who's I think never going to get talked about enough unless he actually ends up, you know, becoming the guy if he has a better college career. He's just always going to be a guy that's never going to get talked about as much because he's the other guy that got recruited with Donovan Edwards, also had a really good spring. So I would actually say running back.
I was either safety or running back. I was going to do whichever one you didn't say. I'm with you on the running backs, though. I mean, if Hassan Haskins, third-year starter, if he's your kind of baseline and everything else is gravy, I think you're in pretty good shape there. I'll go with safety. I'm kind of with you on Brad Hawkins. He did not have a spectacular 2020 season. You could argue at times it simply just wasn't very good. And I think he would even tell you that. But I think Daxon Hill, I think you mentioned Moten, Page. I mean, two guys who I think if Michigan had to throw those two out there, I think they would actually feel pretty good. You know, I think there's some element of, well, let's wait and see. But I think Michigan's track record with second-year defensive backs is stronger. And I think both of those, I mean, I've seen it just with my own eyes in games. I think they have the athleticism and the pop to be pretty stellar safeties. And that makes things very interesting. I mean, they moved a couple guys from safety to corner because they felt like the room was pretty crowded. They felt like they had a pretty strong two deep. Those are little things that I think you can believe in. If players are moving away from one position, it probably means that position is well equipped and Michigan feels that way, whether they're right. I guess we'll wait and see, but I feel like it's a pretty talented group. And then number three, cause I'll probably do a position group power rankings. I think I'm actually going with offensive line for number three. That it's quietly an area. I don't think I'm not going into the summer off season thinking, I don't know what Michigan's going to be at offensive line. I mean, they had so many injuries last season that I think their hand was forced a little bit and they just had to look bad at times. But I also think they had some guys moving people. You know, they have the size, they have the recruiting talent, they have the experience. I mean, Jalen Mayfield's the only guy gone. Now, granted, he's pretty good, but Michigan got to experience. Mayfield only played two games last season. So a lot of guys got experience, and I feel like that's one of the higher floor position groups on the team, even if maybe they don't have first round talent or first round, top 100 draft pick capabilities, like a couple other position groups. Next one. So we heard a bunch of different players had good springs. We just talked about how at some point, I think you and I are starting to tune that out a little bit and just say, you know what? I mean, until they let us see for ourselves, how much can we really go off of? But of all the players who had good springs, my question is, which one do you believe the most? Which one are you saying, yeah, you know what? I think that is someone who's going to breakout season might not be the right way to put it, but is going to be someone that's on the rise, that's ascending, that may surprise people this fall. Is there any one of the different players you've heard that you're kind of like, yeah, I really could see that?
I'm not counting Hill.
Sure.
Right.
Five-star has played a lot.
Yeah. I'm not going to count him. I'm going to go because Corum would kind of be the other guy maybe, but I'm going to go with someone else just for the sake of conversation. Trevor Keegan at left guard.
Man, did he have a nice Penn State game.
That's just like, and that's part
of the
reason.
Where was he the
whole time? Oh man, we were talking about that on the, I don't know if we, maybe it was before we recorded, but just like, yeah, where the hell, like, why was he not like, it was bizarre. We had to watch it. We had like four pancakes in the first like eight plays or something. I'm going to go with him. I think there are actually a couple candidates on the offensive line, Zinter being another guy. I think, had extensive experience last year, could play guard, could play center.
Steve, have you heard of my availability theory?
Oh, I believe that. I have fully.
He was the only freshman made available this spring.
Yep.
Now, granted, he's a rising sophomore, but in terms of who was available for press conferences, for those who don't know, my theory is that Michigan is relatively, they're not like 100% attached to it, but the players that you get made available to first as media is the order that Michigan thinks is kind of like the top players.
Yeah.
So he was in there, and I think he was the only 2020 guy that was.
Right. History kind of bears that out, right? I mean, we've talked about that for a long time, but I'm going to go with Keegan as a guy I think really just embraces that role. Kind of the way it was explained to me is it's no longer a matter of if they, there are actual like expectations now for him that extend beyond competing or seizing the job as much as it is, okay, now let's see what this guy can do. So, you know, I'm going to go with him. Actually, I think could be quietly a really, really good left guard for Michigan this season.
Yeah, that's a good one. Zinter is as well. I think the RJ Moten one, I'm not completely like chips in on that just because we haven't seen him a ton in games, but I think the fact that Michigan was so impressed with him when he arrived on campus and now he's kind of starting to piece together. I mean, he's rotating with the ones when they have two returning starting safeties. So he's another guy. Corum, I think, is a good one. I'm going to go with Mike Sainristil still and Cornelius Johnson. I think those are two guys who quietly, I didn't realize this until I did the story on Giles Jackson transferring. They started as many games as Giles did last season. Now, who officially gets the start versus who gets the most targets? I guess there's something there, but I think that those two, when I hear that they are really elevating their game, what that tells me is those are the best two receivers in spring camp. And that was not the case last season. Now Cornelius Johnson had a quietly strong sophomore season. I mean, he had a couple really big games, had a couple quiet games as well, but you know, there's a lot of potential there. And then Sainristil, Giles Jackson could have transferred for a million reasons, but if you're repping as like one of the number one receivers, it's rare for you to transfer to a program that is having similar, I don't want to say rebuilding, but they're also facing low expectations entering this upcoming season. So I believe that there is a Sainristil push to be that number one starting slot. And I believe Cornelius Johnson can be, just because of what we saw last season, then kind of it being corroborated with what was said this spring. Again, didn't get to see it, but those are two guys that I'm kind of thinking, well, I really could see their path to being, really prominent playmakers for Michigan. Final question. Obviously, we have all offseason to dig into all of this more. Position group with the biggest question marks around it following spring football. Position group that you're thinking, man, I really don't know what's going to happen there. More so than maybe other positions, because there is some element of intrigue. But Steve, is there a position where you really didn't have any of your answers or questions answered this spring?
None of the questions were answered, but I still think the interior of the defensive line is still really going to be the biggest question for me. Particularly if you think about the fact that we're definitely going to see some 3-4 sets, right? I don't think it's going to be.
Yeah, it's been said.
Yeah. Right? Not exclusive. They're going to mix it up, but there will be some 3-4 sets. Do they have a guy on their roster right now that can slow down a running game in a 3-4 set? I think that's going to be something, you know, to watch. I still think, and again, to kind of, I don't know, not to crap on some people, but, you know, people already resigned. Oh, Michigan's not going to use the portal. They are. That's one spot I definitely still think there's a real possibility that they find somebody, they make some kind of addition there. Question is, would it be I don't know if you're going to find any difference makers in the spring or if it'll be a depth type, but I do.
Right.
At the very least, there are going to be some legitimate looks made and you know, moves made to see who they can add there. So that'd probably be the spot for me. Not very original because it feels like it's been an issue since
yeah.
left, but you know, it still is though, kind of the big spot I kind of think of, just because there's so much pressure on them in a 3-4 to do a lot, you know, both in the run and the pass game.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, because they're not putting Taylor Upshaw as a down lineman in a 3-4. You know, they're not putting, they might put Aiden Hutchinson in there, but I mean, it's, they need some big boys. They need some guys who can move the line of scrimmage and set, kind of set the table for the linebackers to make plays. So that's a good one. I'm going to go with linebacker. I kind of came in wondering if any of the, you know, Khalil Mullings, Nakai Hill-Green, Junior Colson, I think I might be forgetting Anthony Solomon. There might be one I'm forgetting. They have a lot of what I would classify as like speedy, explosive potential linebackers in kind of the freshman and sophomore classes, but how quickly did they get on the field and help Michigan? And from the sounds of it, it kind of sounds like it's Josh Ross and then Mike Barrett moving from Viper to inside linebacker, and then, you know, the outside linebacker Reaper position. And then they don't really, I mean, I guess Colson, Mullings, it didn't seem like they had a true sense of what I never got a true sense of what the linebacker room was going to look like. And so maybe I missed something here or there, but, you know, if I'm thinking of putting together a depth chart, linebacker is the one where I'm kind of guessing. And I, you know, and the fact that one of the guys who I'm already penciling in, Mike Barrett, I mean, he's switching roles quite a bit. I like his game a lot, but that's not nothing to switch from Viper to the inside backer position. So that'd be the one that I have the most questions about. Cause I agree with you, Steve, about the defensive line. I think if Mazi Smith, quote unquote, puts things together, I think you could rock with Smith, Hinton, and Jeter, and you know, kind of Welshoff rotating in there as well. I don't think Michigan's going in like completely screwed if it's those three. Linebacker, I don't even know who the third is. And I don't know how ready some of the, you know, Nakai Hill-Green was a guy we heard a lot about last fall. Didn't see him a ton in games. I mean, they were putting Adam Shibley in. You know, Khalil Mullings, similar situation.
One of our biggest criticisms last year too, right?
Yeah, like it's the defense hard to learn. So that's something I'm really curious about with this new defensive scheme. Another question I didn't really get answered is how much do you change what you're teaching just to make sure, hey, if there's a really fast, explosive guy who has a nose for the ball, get him on the field. So that would be my biggest question mark. All right, let's open up the mailbag. Just for the interest of time, I don't know if we'll answer all of them in the same detail. I think we probably covered a couple of them anyways. But obviously we always appreciate the fans passing along questions. Rugby for Life says, why is the program administration such a bleeping joke? I don't know. I think that was probably waters a little hot. We asked like minutes after Xavier Worthy announced that he was asking for release from his national letter of intent. Adam says, early season predictions. Feels like an 8-4 team, Steve. Any sense? We didn't get to see them.
There's no sense. How are we supposed to know?
I think they're slightly better than the Doomsday fans.
Right. I think there's enough talent on this team to win more games than what people think they're going to win. I guess that's really the only thought I have right now. I have nothing to go off of outside of, well, some of the individual players we heard that have looked good. I mean, there's, again, we just being honest, like we didn't get like, you know, anything really this spring to go off of. It was the most closed it's been from both a public and a private standpoint since I've been doing this. So,
yeah,
you know, that's about where I'm at right now.
Ryan Anderson asked, any transfers on the radar? Does Michigan academics make it hard to go after transfers? Where does Michigan go after Xavier Worthy decommits? So one at a time here, I think Xavier Worthy, I don't expect them to go after another receiver for right now. I don't expect them to go portal shopping in that sense.
I'd be surprised.
Does Michigan academics make it hard to go after transfers? So I think if I could summarize it quickly, I think it can be difficult because I don't think Michigan's straight up saying, no, you can't get in. I think a lot of it comes down to not enough credits transfer for Michigan to beat out another school. So say, for example, you're a sophomore or you just finished your sophomore year. You have 60 credits under your belt. I think you need around 60 to be eligible. If you try to transfer to Michigan and they say, sorry, only 44 of your credits are transferring. Well, and say another school says, 56 of them are going to transfer. Well, where are you going to go? You're not going to lose a semester of your education just to be at Michigan. I mean, maybe you sometimes do, but I don't think you do that often. And that's, as far as the admissions talk, that's the only time we've actually seen evidence. I mean, Nojel Eastern talked about how he had like 90 credits and they were only going to honor like 56 of them or something like that. And so ended up not being a part of Michigan's 2020-2021 season. Steve, any transfers on the radar? Any names that you are keeping an eye on?
Names? No. Okay. I think you'll see with spring practices concluding, I think you'll see another influx of guys into the portal. But as far as specific names, no. Like I mentioned, the defensive interior as being a position. I think corner is another spot, which probably should have been mentioned also as far as the question mark spot, I think.
Yeah. They return a lot of people, but I don't think much is known about how good that group's going to be.
Right. So those are spots, but no. I don't think it's any secret. Michigan, it's different for Michigan than it is for some other programs across the country, right? I think that's kind of known. Kind of the question is, like, how big is that difference? You know, it seems to tend to kind of vary. They'll be able to find it. I mean, they've used the portal. That's kind of the thing. Like there's this idea that they've just don't take transfers. I just think
they took two this cycle already.
Right. That they have to be, they're forced, the football program, to be a little more selective, I guess is the best way to put it.
And graduate transfers and freshman transfers are much, much yes. easier in terms of the credit losses.
Yep.
You know, that whole thing.
Yep. And that's not a Jim Harbaugh thing. That's a University of Michigan thing. That's something that any coach who coaches here is going to have to work around unless Michigan as an institution changes something.
Which would be kind of a weird precedent because then.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying they should or they will. I just said
everybody
like, that's
the
only
transfer to Michigan.
Yeah, that's the only thing, you know, that was is going to change that. So
Tyler Patterson asked, could you guys expand more on Matty Dudek? I think we did that. Wolverine Pulse asked, why can Michigan never have nice things? We don't need it. I mean, I think it's similar tongue in cheek tone. Just the timing of the question was, I'll take the fall for that one, but definitely seems like Michigan, the hits just keep coming for at least the football program, obviously for basketball. I mean, it seems like everything goes right for basketball and so nothing goes right for football.
Basketball just got their team captain back like for a fifth year. Like,
Akil Badu for Heisman says, what record would it take for Ward to move on from Harbaugh after this year? We don't know. I would guess 7-5. I mean, the contract was restructured. I think everyone gets hung up on the fact that Harbaugh was extended and they're like baffled at that. It is restructured, so it is way, way cheaper for Michigan to move on from Harbaugh.
Big time.
If last year wasn't a fluke and there isn't a bounce back this season, and now Michigan fans might say, well, what's a bounce back? Probably 9-3. I know fans don't want to hear that, but if they're in position with the young offensive players they have and they win 8-9 games, some context is relevant to me. If they have as many injuries as they had last season, I don't know how you can expect 9 wins. But I think if it's like a 7-5, like a Brady Hoke type season where fans are booing and they're not showing up to games, I think Michigan put itself in position where it can say, you know, we'll pay you this very low buyout and move on.
Really, you look at the contract, it was a lot of ways Harbaugh betting on himself.
Yeah.
Right? That's the way I kind of look at it now. Yeah, because it is. It's structured. It's easier for Michigan to get out now. I mean, granted, it was expiring or whatever. Like, the way that this was restructured, I mean, he did Michigan a favor in a lot of ways, in my opinion, because it's a lot easier. Yeah, it's so much easier now for them to move on if they want to. Just a matter of, what that threshold is. I don't know what it is. I agree with you. I think, 500 or around 500, either, 5 or 7, 7-5, be tough to – you know, depending on what kind of candidates out there, you see Matt Campbell stayed at Iowa State for another year.
Did he get an extension too?
Yeah, I don't know what the buyout would be, but you got to think Michigan, one of the few programs.
Well, they lowered the buyout to get rid of. Yeah, anyway.
You know what I mean, though? Like,
but, oh, yeah, I'm with you. I agree with you.
So, yeah.
Rich Jasper says it's a make it or break it year for Jim Harbaugh. Feels like it. I feel like he's a pretty competitive guy too. I feel like he's in the camp where like, this has got to be a year where I win games. I don't think he wants to be the coach that goes 0-10 against Ohio State or, you know, goes 4-6 against Michigan State. Cause usually records like that, you aren't Michigan's coach for very long. So certainly crazy how much the tone has changed, but it feels like a make it or break it year.
I think so. I think it's hard to say it's not.
Yeah.
Even with a tough schedule, new defense, totally new defensive unit. You know, I mean, it's part of me thought this whole deal might be a 2-year window because of all the overhauls like they made as far as the staff and the scheme defensively.
Well, and if they do get rid of Harbaugh, whoever's coming in is coming in with a lot of talent.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, particularly on the offensive side of the ball, right? That's what we've kind of been saying. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's just so much gray area there. I could see it being a 2-year window for the reason I just stated. But, yeah, if they crap the bed, you know, it's not – yeah, it's going to be sayonara most likely, I would think.
Yeah. Director of Common Sense says, do you think Harbaugh truly connects with the players like Tom Allen does? Is his awkward personality on the outside different – with the players in private? That's an interesting question. I think he does connect with the players. I mean, talking to a few former players, there were players literally opting out that were like, if you don't think Jim Harbaugh's the guy for Michigan, something's wrong with you. So I think the fact that these players are going to bat for him as much as they are, I don't think he's for everybody. I don't think he connects with players like Tom Allen does, but Tom Allen also might connect better than anyone else in the country. But I do think Harbaugh really is more endeared toward people who speak football. I mean, he's like a football guy. I think he does connect with players. I think his awkward personality can make some things awkward. I've heard the rumors and rumblings about like their pep talks before like big road games were like very brief and awkward. But I don't think that's why Michigan's in the situation it's in. I think he does connect with players. And I think if there is a disconnect, I don't think it's not why they're 0-1 whatever against whoever, you know, so that's not the woes Michigan has. And I do think players respond to him. Otherwise they wouldn't commit, stay with, you know, not transfer out. I mean, some players transfer out, but for the most, by and large, it's been players who were lined to be backup upperclassmen. So, and I've looked at literally every transfer and I've come to that conclusion. So certainly not like Tom Allen. He is a bit of an awkward duck, but I do think he is a little bit more endearing behind the scenes with players and people who really love football.
Yeah, this, I think I don't think it's a bad question. It does feel like one of those, they just went 2-4 last year and things aren't looking good. What is there?
Let's find 50 things that could be going wrong.
Yeah. Cause it's like, well, is he not connecting with his players when they, in 2016, 2018, you know, I think that's one of those. The other thing, like with the attrition, like he had high attrition at Stanford too, relative to a lot of other programs. So people look at all the transfers, that stuff's like, I don't really think that was kind of something that not shocking to me.
Yeah.
So
he isn't going to grovel with players who might leave.
Yes.
I will say that is one thing that I think he is different than like other coaches about, not every coach, but a lot of other coaches, is if a player is thinking about transferring, I think Harbaugh, maybe this is a fault, maybe it's a strength, but I think his reaction is more, if you don't want to be here, I'm not going to make you be here. And so I think that leads to maybe a slightly higher, but if you look around the country, I mean, every school has transfers these days.
Right. Yeah, I agree. That's a good way to put it. Cause that's real no nonsense when it comes to that type of stuff, which that shouldn't surprise anybody. But overall, yeah, I think he connects with this. Like you said, you talk about, I think it was Nico Collins that came out, who didn't even play last year.
Right.
He's under no obligation necessarily to go as far as he did specifically. And
well, there are NFL starters doing the exact same thing.
Right. So yeah, I think it's one of those things, like I said, I think it's, and it's no fault of the question asker, because I do think it's a fair question, given that he is a unique personality, right?
Very awkward with us.
Yes. Yes. So I think it's fair in that regard. I just also think it's also one of those questions that wouldn't be asked if they were going 5-1 and had the same amount of, and if they had gone 5-1 last year and had the same amount of attrition that they've had this offseason. You know, it's just one of those types of things.
Another question, Linda Mulig asks, Xavier Worthy just announced he was decommitting. We talked about that. Giles Jackson recruited him, or I guess not recruited him, but was influential. Do you think those are related?
I think to an extent. If Jackson was still here, would Xavier Worthy sign? Would he have ended up in Ann Arbor? That's a tough one. Part of me thinks yes, but part of me, I don't know. That's a tough one. I think people, the natural inclination is to believe that he would be, because they were so publicly tight on social media, even before he committed to Michigan back in, like, it's been almost a year, you know, but I don't know. I mean, like I said, there was always kind of something going on in that recruitment, whether it be the Alabama stuff or admissions and all this crap. So I can't say for sure that it wasn't a factor, but I don't think it was as big a factor as people maybe make it out to be.
Yeah, I think it's two things that happened. I don't think they are completely unrelated, but that's not what the circumstance of thing A is not why thing B happened. They're not directly, was it causational or whatever. Streetcar Scholar, our last question says, will Michigan win anything of note before my future grandchildren turn 50? Yeah, I don't think either of us. Oh, you think so?
I mean, I'm just playing the odds here. Future grandchildren. You're talking like, will Michigan not win anything for the next, I don't know how old the guy is, but 60 years.
That's true. If he has grandchildren right now.
Yeah.
That, yeah, I mean, statistically.
That's even then though, say a grandchild's 8 years old, that's 42 years. You're not going to win anything for the next 42 years. I'm not so sure about that.
Okay. I don't disagree. I do think odds are they'll win something of note. Like, I mean, you got to think at some point you're just going to even get lucky, but it is tougher to win in the North than it used to be. I think it is tougher to win at Michigan than it used to be. So I get the frustration. I don't think he's like, I mean, another probably tongue-in-cheek question, but I get where fans are kind of like, what is going on? You know, what is going on? What does the future look like? How does Michigan get out of this cycle? Because there are schools that are stuck in these cycles. I think Nebraska, Tennessee, I think Texas and Michigan are both kind of like on the cusp. USC, maybe in a similar situation. So on that note, check out all of our stories over at the MichiganInsider.com. If you like this podcast or other podcasts, throw us a rating. Feel free to subscribe to it, or I guess just follow along. Let us know. Tell your friends. For Steve Lorenz, I'm Zach Shaw. This has been the Wolverine 24/7 podcast. Hope you had fun. Hope you learned something. We'll see you next time.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.